I have to start by warning you that what you're about to hear is, from a certain perspective, thoroughly radical. Okay, it's not, and I'm aware of this, not the standard typical approach that you will hear, see, read, etc. I'm well aware of that. And there's no need to come back over the next few days and tell me, but we had this shiur in which we discussed these halakha, we learned this and this and that. I know. But I'm going to tell it to you as I see it. I'm going to show you what it's based on. I'm going to try to the best of my ability to explain why I say what I do. To my mind, we're going to discuss a little bit about the period of Svira, and particularly the Avelut of Svira. There's an area in which I think it's one of those cases where you just like look at the world and go, they've gone nuts. They've gone nuts. It makes no sense. And I'd like to explain on several different levels what is wrong with the way it's commonly approached nowadays. And this is a relatively new phenomenon. And what I think the correct direction is. I think that it's not just in details, fundamentally, most people just get it totally wrong. Okay, obviously in my opinion, but you'll judge for yourselves. But let's start from the beginning. When you mention Sphira to the average observant Jew, the first thing they think about is things that you're not allowed to do. Okay, Isurim, Avelut, etc. Really, you think about the Avelut of Sphira, which to my mind is a tragedy and a travesty, because this is not supposed to be a period of Avelut. That's a fundamental mistake. It's entirely the wrong direction, as we'll see. What's more, that's not what Sphira, I mean, that aspect, to the degree that it exists, is a late minhag. It's a minhag from the Gaonim. It's not even in the Gemara. It's a minhag. The halachot that are d'oraita and d'rabbanan of Sphira, of course, are of entirely different nature, right? The Karban HaOmer, the Sphira of the Omer, all these things. It's not the first thing people think about in Sphira, which is bizarre in and of itself. But it's much more than that. But let's start at the beginning. Gemara Yevamot, Samach Bet Amibet, right hand, top corner. Commenting on a pasuk in Kohelet, Baboket Ratzarecha, L'Erval Tanach Yadecha, Ken Chayodei Zeh, Yechshar, Hazeh, Ozeh, Vimshnehem, Kechad, Tovim. Okay, pasuk talks about, essentially, it's a metaphor speaking about the idea that a person should be productive, should do, should accomplish throughout their entire life. You don't know what's going to yield results. Baboket Ratzarecha, V'La'Erval Tanach Yadecha. The morning, the dawn of life, we have to be productive. The twilight of life, throughout our entire lives, we have to keep on doing. We don't know what's going to produce results. We have to do. Rabbi Akiva Omer, so Rabbi Akiva comments on this. If a person, their lamad or limed, Torah b'yalduto, yilmo Torah b'zignuto. Okay, a person learned Torah, lamad Torah b'yalduto, he learned Torah when he was young, he should learn when he's old. Hayul talmidim b'yalduto, if he had when he had talmidim when he was young, yilo talmidim b'zignuto, he should have more talmidim when he's old. Shenamar b'bokas ratzarecha v'gomer. Amru, so he said about him, Shneim asar elef zugim talmidim hayulo l'Rabbi Akiva, migevet adan tripas. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 zugot, pairs of talmidim. Okay, 12,000 pairs of talmidim. 24,000 talmidim. Why is that? Very important. We'll get back to that. Okay, excellent. That's a very important diuk in the Gemara. We'll get back to it. Bezrat Hashem in a few moments. V'chulan meitu beperek echad. They all died during one period of time. Mipnei shelo nahagu kavod zel azeb, because they didn't treat each other with kavod. We'll define what that means, Bezrat Hashem, in a few moments. V'haya ha'olam shameim. And the world of Torah was desolate after the death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Continues the Gemara. And says, Ad Shabbat Rabbi Akiva Itzel Rabbatenu Shabbatarom Ushana Lahem, until Rabbi Akiva came to our rabbis of the Arabim of the south and Shana'a Lahem, taught it to them. obvious reading of the Gemara, perhaps, he taught the Torah to them, right? There was no one who knew Torah, except for Rabbi Akiva. He teaches it to these. And who are they? These are all of our Torah Shebaal Peh, based on these people. The second set of Talmidim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, Behem, Hem, Hemidu, Torah, Otashan. At that moment, at that time, they established the Torah. Tana Kulam made to me Pesach Baratzeret. They all died between Pesach and Shavuot. Am Rav Chama Bar Abba, Vitem Rav Chia Bar Abin, Kulam made to me Tara, Mayam Rav Nachman Askra. Okay. That's the Gemara. That's the story of Tamir Rabbi Akiva. Notice, before we get to understanding details of the Gemara and what it does say and what it means, what does the Gemara not say here? There's one line missing from this Gemara. What's missing from this Gemara? Exactly. And therefore, we mourn during this period of time for Tamir Rabbi Akiva. That's not in the Gemara. Now, there are arguments from silence and arguments from silence. This is a very powerful one. It's very clear that as far as the Gemara is concerned, it's not Ki'ilu. We don't have a Sugi in Shas. We have a Sugi in Shas that discusses this historical event and does not say what any one of us would have said at the end of this story, and therefore we have a veil during this period of time. Which means simply that it's a later minhag. And in fact, the earliest source for it comes from some Gaonim, okay? And it's quoted by Rishonim, and from there to the Tur, and from there to the Shulchan Aruch, and so on and so forth. But it's not in the Gemara. Okay? It's a post-Talmudic minhag. Okay, keep that in the back of your minds. What does the Gemara mean? So one of the great ways to understand, to really understand what this Gemara is saying, well, first of all, you have to look at it carefully and analyze it carefully and decipher what it means. But we have help. We have assistance. Because there's a parallel source, and it's obvious, where if you wanted to find other chazal, and this is, in general, a very important thing, whenever you want to understand something better, you look at parallel sources that are on the same plane, meaning, for example, if you have a difficult Tosfot, right? It's unclear what exactly is Tosfot, what does Tosfot mean? It's very cryptic. So one thing that may shed light on it, and I'm oversimplifying, it's not our topic, but one thing that you do that helps you to understand it is, you look in parallel sources. You look in Tosod Harash, Tosod Harash, Tosod Rabbeinu Peretz, V'chule, you look at other collections of Balei HaTosfot, you look in the Mordechai, you look in the Or HaZeruah, you look in other Balei HaTosfot, and particularly you have a Rabbeinu Tam, right, that's unclear, and you know, you want to know, or even if it's not unclear, but you want to be sure about what exactly, so you look in Sefer HaYashar by Rabbeinu Tam, you look in his Tshuvot, right, you compare parallel sources. So where would I look for a parallel to this Gemara? So the answer is obvious. The first place I'm going to look, Kohelet Rabbah. Not because it's on the sheet, but because it's a drasha on a pasuk in Kohelet. Right? It's a drasha on a pasuk Kohelet. So I look in Kohelet Rabbah and see what it says on that pasuk.
How'd you get to Kohelet?
The whole Gemara is based on this pasuk in Kohelet of Baboker Zratzar Echa, Erval Tana. That's pasuk in Kohelet. So I look in Kohelet Rabbah, and boom, there's this whole parallel. There are slight differences. Are we talking about five? Are five names mentioned or seven? Is it 12,000 pairs or 12,000 people? Okay, details, but basically we recognize immediately the same story. Babokez Ratzarecha, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Shnei Masar Alafim Talmidim Hayuli Migevet Ba'ad Antripos, the Kulan Meitu Bechayai Ben Pesach Latzeret. Right, clearly the same, right? There's the same chazal, just in slightly different words. But that's helpful because if I have slightly different words, one can shed light on the other. Let's continue. Uvesov hemiduli shiva ve'eluhein Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemi, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Rabbi Eliezer ben Osh, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yochanan Sanla. Okay, essentially the same, slight difference here and there, but basically the same source. Listen carefully. So I had a hunch about this Gemara, and here you see in Kohelet Rabbah that's clear. What does it mean, ushana lahem, that Rabbi Akiva taught it to them? So I think the Pshat in the Gemara is not that he taught the Torah to them, not that he didn't teach Torah to them, certainly he did, thank you. But more than that, ushana lahem means he taught them the lesson of the first set of Talmidim. And what did he teach them? Let's take a look. Amar lahem, this is the parallel to ushana lahem in our Gemara. Amar lahem, harishonim lo meitu, ela b'mnei shahaita einehem tsara b'torah zelazeh. They were stingy with their Torah. Atem lo tiyu kein, don't be like them. Miyad amdu umilu kol eretz Yisrael Torah. And that's parallel to, of course, Bo Tashah, right? And Himidu Torah Otashah. in our Gemara. In other words, at that moment, so then they go and they filled Eretz Yisrael with Torah. That's the parallel here. And it sheds tremendous light on this Gemara, because it tells us, what does it mean that Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim were not Nohei Kavod Zelazeh? So if you look at the parallel, you see, what does it mean, Lo Nagu Kavod Zelazeh? It means, to get back to your question, why 12,000 zugot? What might we use instead of zugot?
Chavruta.
Chavruta, exactly. Meaning the issue is that you had people who were learning with each other, and lo nagu kavod zelazeh. What does that mean? I'll prove this to you in just a few moments, but already we see it from the Kohelet Rabbah. That, what does it mean, lo nagu kavod zelazeh? That they were interested only in their own knowledge of Torah. They wanted to be the best. Their chavrusa, if I help them, if I share with them, if I try to cause them to excel, then I'm not going to stand, I'm not going to be so great, I'm not going to stand. Lo nagu kavod zelazeh. They weren't concerned about the other person's kavod, they were about their own. And therefore, there's an incredible thing. Think about this for a moment. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim. Now that's an incredible, I mean, even if it's an exaggeration, I'm not saying it is, but even if it's an exaggeration, but 24,000 Talmidim, not Talmidim, 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Now, what the question I ask myself when I learn this Gemara is, they died, and then v'hayta olam shamein, the world was desolate. What do you mean? Where are all the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim? Right? It was, why is the world desolate? What do you mean? You have 24,000 people who are direct Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Wow, that's unbelievable. I mean, you had all of our Torah is based on 5 or 7 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. 24,000. And they died, b'hayta olam shamem? How is that? And the answer is simple. Lo nagu kavod zelazeh. They weren't spreading it. They weren't sharing it. They weren't developing other people. They were worrying only about themselves. They were concerned about their learning, their becoming great in Torah. And I'm not saying that they weren't altruistic, that it wasn't lishma. Maybe they, I'm sure that, you know, they at least felt that they were, you know, they have to develop themselves, they have to grow and learn, they have to become great in Torah. But lo nagu kavod zelazeh, shahayu einehem, shahayta einehem, tsara b'torah zelazeh. Rabbi Akiva teaches the second set. That's what happened to the first set. Don't be like that. And whereas the 24,000 left nothing behind, by contrast, the 5 or 7 filled all of Eretz Yisrael with Torah. Okay, that's the difference between the first set and the second set. Okay. Uh-oh. I have to take this for 1 second. I apologize. Okay, yes. Questions? Yes. Shh. Yeah. The historical aspect is a whole interesting question. There are those who say that this is really an allusion to the Merit Bar Kokhba, and that, you know, this is a veiled reference to how which certainly Rabbi Akiva was at the forefront of that, and that certainly many of his Talmidim died, etc. That's a different
like
topic. But again, that's not our concern just this moment. But that's the direction, you know, which people discuss the historical aspect. To the best of my knowledge, that's what they're talking. Yes. Well, okay, something to think about. I don't know. Again, we have. I'm going to stay very focused on just the aspect that we need to discuss, because there's a lot to discuss. But okay, something to think about. Peseda, yes.
But when you have such great Torah giants, wouldn't it be presumptuous for a student to take his own Talmidim? It's like if you have Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Moshe Feinstein's best student starts his own yeshiva right next door.
Who's starting a yeshiva? Teaching other people Torah. Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. And in fact, Rav Moshe said very clearly that that's what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. Okay, he has a famous place in Kedushin where he talks about, in Jewish Moshe, if I'm not saying, where he talks about that everyone's a chiyuv to take 10% of the time that they spend learning Torah to teach others, and kiruv, or teaching others, whatever. In any case, Bekitzur, yes.
What does this whole story have to do with the
Because Rabbi Akiva is trying to tell us an example from his own life. He's saying, you don't know what's going to ski. You know, it's all these 24,000 Talmidim from his youth, nothing became of them. But the five or seven from his old age, everything is from that. Right? And so he's saying how important it is not to say, okay, well, I did and I'm done and I'm retired. But no, but you have to constantly, you don't know what's going to produce results. So you have to keep on trying, keep on playing the season. Yes?
So it says the world was desolate after they all died. But Rabbi Akiva wasn't the only one teaching and having students. There were other people.
Obviously, the Gemara and the Chazal focusing on, you know.
They just gave it as an aspect. Like, it could have been so much more.
It could be. Again, exactly. You know, not saying everything has to be taken. But the direction is very clear. Okay. I'd like to show you something incredible. We've learned before about how Masechet Avot reflects the people, the personalities, the character, the experiences of the person who's speaking. And we learned through the first five prakim of Avot in this way, to some degree. We discussed a little bit about different pieces from the first five. The sixth that we mentioned before is a braita that's appended to Avod. But let's take a look at that braita for a moment. This is a braita. Shanu chacham b'lshon ha-mishnah. Right? That's Tanu Rabbanan. Barosha b'char b'hem u'mishnatam. Rabbi Meir Omer. This braita consists of Tanaim. Who are these Tanaim? So you see right away, Rabbi Meir Omer. Who's Rabbi Meir? This is, right, one of the Talmidim, Rabbeinu Shebedarom. Okay, so this braita, this parak is the Mishnah, if you will, of Rabbeinu Shebedarom. And look what they say. Rabbi Meir Omer, the first thing he talks about, Kol Osek B'Torah Lishma Zochel L'Dvarim Harbeh. The importance of learning Torah Lishma. What's Torah Lishma? So we will discuss a little bit, just very briefly. Tosa and Bracha, Adaf Yizayin and Aleph says, talks about Lishma, what's Lishma, not Lishma. Is it better to learn or to do mitzvot, shalolishma, or not to do them at all? Is shalolishma negative or merely not ideal? And Tosa has one approach, the Rambam has another approach, Beseder, not our time. But one thing that Tosa says is very interesting. He says that when it says that shalolishma is worse than nothing, much worse than nothing, right? When it says that also shalolishma, noach lo shalo nivra, a person is doing mitzvot shelo lishma, better that he hadn't been created, better that he was never born. Right? It's much worse than nothing. So he says, "Vim tal mahamar Rav Yehuda Marav per makom shenagu laolam yaso gadam b'torah b'mitzvot afilu shelo lishma shmito shelo lishma balishma." Says Tosa as follows: "V'yeshlomar dehachamayri she'eno lomed el kanter chaver rav v'hatamayri shelomed al menat shechabdu." If a person learns Torah, why? In order to be able to say, I know more than you. I'm better than you. I'm bigger chacham than you. Right? Then the Gemara says, better he wasn't born at all. Right? That's negative. That's destructive. But if it's shelo lishma of a lesser degree, then, okay, at least it'll lead eventually to lishma. In other words, what's the issue of lishma and shelo lishma? So the extreme example of shelo lishma is that I'm learning in order to put down someone else, in order to be holier than thou, in order to be, you know, to put the other guy down. Lishma, what's the opposite of that? What Rabbi Akiva taught his Talmidim, right? That you should learn in order to help others, in order to teach others, in order to share with others. Okay? And neutral is where it's not one extreme or the other, but it's in the middle where, you know, it's not in order to put the other person down, but it's not necessarily in order to build them up either. What does Rabbi Meir say here? And this is the core of what Rabbi Meir is about. This is the core of what Rabbeinu Shebedarom is about. That the greatness of learning Torah lishma, okay? What does it mean, Torah lishma? That I'm learning in order to give in order to contribute to others in Am Yisrael. I wanted to continue for a moment. I'm going to skip down just a little bit, and there's so much here, but if you take a look, the end of this piece from Avot Perek Vav, Halome mechavero perek echad o halacha achad o pasuk echad o dibur echad afilu ota achad. If a person learns anything, however minor, even one letter from someone else, from their friend, now, who can give me a word for this? What are we talking about? We're not talking about someone's Rebbe, right? That's not what the Breita is talking about. What's it talking about? Someone's Chavruta, right? Whether in a formal way or an informal way, but someone's chavruta. Halomei mechavero, right? Someone who is my peer, they're not my Rebbe, and I haven't learned a lot from them. I learned one halacha, one pasuk, one letter, one anything, one, however, sarich linhog bo kavod. You recognize the phrase? What was wrong with the first Talmidim? Shelo nagu kavod zaza. This is Rabotenu Shebedarim, the second set of Talmidim that got the message. So what does it say? You have to be noeg bo kavod. What does it mean to be noeg bo kavod? Listen how beautiful the Braita is. Ve'im kavod el Torah. Shne'emar kivod chachamim yinchalu. What does it mean to be noeg kavod? I'm teaching them Torah, right? So what was the problem? That these chaverim were not noeg kavod zelazah. Ve'im kavod el Torah. That's what the Braita tells us. Right? This perek, and we did it very, very briefly, but this perek is built on the essence of what the mission of the Rabotenu Shebedarim is all about. Okay. This is what the story of Talmid Rabbi Akiva is about. So first we understand what the story of Talmid Rabbi Akiva is about. And before we go any further, okay, at the very least, let's say that the most important thing relating to Talmid Rabbi Akiva, I would assume, is what the Gemara tells us, which is, right, and even if even were the minhag to be from the time of Chazal, and you want to argue that it's in the Sora, it's not in the Gemara, even though it should be in the Gemara, whatever, but the part that the Gemara chooses to tell us is about the issue of Shelo Nagu Kavod Zelazah. So that's the Ikar. Okay, the Nihugei Avelut, that's not in the Gemara, that's later, and important to at least understand what's primary and what's secondary. So there's something that we want to be machmer about. Number one, the first thing to be machmer about is this idea of Shelo Nagu Kavod Zelazah, the lesson of Talmid Rabbi Akiva. Okay, that's number one. That's what we should be most machmer about. After that, we can discuss other things. Let's please turn the page. There's an incredible Prima Gadim. Prima Gadim is one of the great, great achronim on the Shulchan Aruch, one of the great super commentaries. He writes on the Magen Avraham and the Taz, and depending on what sefer of what chelik of Shulchan Aruch. But in Aruch Chaim, it's the Magen Avraham and the Taz, and so on, and go to other parts of Shulchan Aruch. He also, it's really an incredible sefer. He has these p'tichot, which are tremendous to know about. He has individual p'tichot for each hilchot this, hilchot that, hilchot bracha, hilchot shas, whatever, in which he gives you what he feels are the major issues that run through that whole section of halacha. It's a tremendous thing to it's a wonderful way to get a focus on what your area of halacha that you're learning. He also has a p'ticha kolelet, a couple of them, in which he goes to general issues that run through halacha in general. You know, things like chatzi shir and safek drabon lekula. It's like a long, the p'ticha is from the word liftod, and like an introduction, right? These are the introductions, which are fantastic. And the Prima Gadim is a tremendous, tremendous, very important achron, very much used. And the Prima Gadim, happen not to have the Prima, I don't think there is, but in the database I had, at least when I made up the source sheet, they didn't have the Prima Gadim, but they had the Bir Halacha. So the Bir Halacha quotes the Prima Gadim verbatim, but this is the Prima Gadim that we're about to read. It's just that out of laziness, I didn't type it in from the Prima Gadim myself, I just copied it from the Bir Halacha, which was on the database. So anyhow, he says like this, Noagim Shalol Estaper V'chulei Koin Flan Shulchan Aruch, right, that we don't take haircuts during Svira. It says, Mikol Makom, Otan hamutarim listaper b'chol hamoed kibesiman tafkuf lamed aliv yeshlomar degam besvira shari tlo adiv michol hamoed. Says the Prima Gadim, something that on the surface makes no sense. On the surface it makes no sense. Of course, who wants to stay on the surface? But on the surface it makes no sense. Right? It really makes a tremendous amount of sense. But on the surface it makes no sense. He says like this. If a person is allowed, in other words, it's an Issur D'Rabbanan, it's in the Mishnah, right? In Mishnah in Moed Katan, beginning of the third parak of Moed Katan, El Megalchim Moed, that there's an Issur D'Rabbanan to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed. Okay? Issur D'Rabbanan to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed, Dina de Mishnah. Okay? Not a Minhag, an Issur D'Rabbanan. Okay? And not post Talmud, we're talking about the Mishnah. Mishnah says that you can't take a haircut during Chol HaMoed, but there are certain exceptions. a person who was in prison and wasn't able to take a haircut, and then they're free during Chol HaMoed, is allowed to take a person who was in an unusual state where they weren't able to cut their hair before. Again, there are definitions, halakhically, etc., we're not getting into that right now. Is allowed to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed, but otherwise not. Says the Prima Gadda. Okay, so one example, the famous Tshuva Rav Moshe, and the Rav talks about this, and others, that an example of this is that a man who is clean shaven, right, a person has a beard, a person clean shaven, is allowed to shave during Chol HaMoed. In fact, Rav Moshe says Tolda Hachmir, but the Rav and Tamira say, and I think it's very compelling, that not mutter, it's a chiyuv. You know, it's because you're supposed to look nice during Chol HaMoed. You're not supposed to look grungy during Chol HaMoed. So, in any case, during Chol HaMoed, you're allowed to shave during Chol HaMoed. Which is why it follows, and there are three good reasons for this, although I know the common practice. People like to experiment with growing their beard during Sfira. Not discussing aesthetics at the moment, but the point is that there are at least three compelling halachic reasons why l'chol hadeyot, there's no question you can shave during Sfira. Okay, I'm not going to go through all three right now because they're not relevant to it. I need to get into it. But one of the reasons is this prima gadim. Okay, if it's mutter during Chol HaMoed, it's mutter during Sfira. Okay, it's mutter during Chol HaMoed, it's mutter during Sfira. And since it's mutter during Chol HaMoed, everything I'm saying is my opinion. I know that you'll have plenty of people disagree with everything I'm saying, especially as we go on, it'll get worse and worse. But, it's a davar pashut. It's a davar pashut that, of course, you can shave during Sfira because you can shave during Chol HaMoed. And I'll go a step further. You should shave during Sfira, just like you should shave during Chol HaMoed. Now, but the prima gadim on the surface is very difficult, even though, and I'm not aware of people who argue with this, the prima gadim says, the Be'er Halacha quotes it, no other opinion, one opinion. But what does that mean? How can you compare Sfira and Chol HaMoed? They're different issues. Granted, there's no question that the prima gadim is right, that Chol HaMoed, the Easter of cutting your hair, is much more chamor. Okay, cutting your hair on Chol HaMoed is a greater isur than cutting your hair during Sfira, because Sfira is a minhag and Chol HaMoed is an isur drabanan, and that's true, but there are different types of halachot. Meaning, Chol HaMoed is because of a gzera of Shema Yikanes L'Regel Menuval. That Chazal didn't want us, we all know how busy it is getting ready for Yom Tov, right? We're getting ready for Yom Tov, Erev Yom Tov, you have a gazillion things to do. Who has time to take a haircut? Who has time to take a shave? You guys are busy, and you'll say, Chol HaMoed, things will be quiet, I'll have time, I'll take a haircut. So Chazal said, no, we're going to say it's us to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed, because we don't want you to wait, because then you're going to go into the first days of Chol HaMoed, right? All swimming, we don't want that to happen. Yes. Cell phones are a mixed blessing. Okay, anyhow, the point is, what? Shama Yikane L'Regel Minuval. Right, disgusting. So therefore, Chazal said, you can't put off your haircut for Chol HaMoed, you take before Chol HaMoed. Okay, so therefore, there are certain people who are in a unique category where they had no choice, where they couldn't Erev Yom Tov. Right, that's why Rav Moshe and others say that if you shave every day, the hair that grows on Chol HaMoed, you know, on the first day, where you couldn't, if you shaved Erev Yom Tov, if you shaved Erev Yom Tov. If you didn't shave, then you can't. But if you shaved Erev Yom Tov, so you did what you can't shave what's going to grow afterwards, right? So therefore, it's like Yotzei Mibeit HaAsurim. In any case, so that's Chol HaMoed. But Sfira is a different issue entirely. Sfira is Avelut. So what is Yotzei Mibeit HaAsurim? Or what is, shaving because you shave before and I, what does that do with anything? So logically, what the Prima Gadim says, it would seem, I emphasize, in case anyone has an urgent need to leave before the end, I emphasize, it seems that what the Prima Gadim says makes no sense. Chas v'shalom, Prima Gadim makes a lot of sense. But, okay, we'll understand. but lot, lot. Okay. Now, I want to look up for a minute. I'm just curious. People have not heard this before. No cheating. If you look, let's start with the Shulchan Aruch. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, what things will tell you are asur, without looking inside, are asur on during the period, during that veil of the sphere? What things are asur to do? Who can give me one thing? Yes. Getting a haircut. What else?
Getting married.
What else?
Live music.
Okay. Anything, anyone else?
Movies.
Going to a simcha. Yes? What else?
Shaving.
Okay. Okay, so only two of those were correct. Okay? Only two of those are correct. The only two things that are mentioned, listen carefully, the only two things that are mentioned in any of the primary sources, okay, until relatively recently, the only two things that are mentioned in any of the primary sources, even if you wanted to find the Shulchan Aruch as a primary source, which is a stretch, through the Shulchan Aruch and a couple of hundred years beyond, you will find nothing being asur except for two things. Number one, haircuts. Not shaving, not trimming your beard even. Okay? Haircuts. That's number one. As opposed to, let's say, during Av, Shavu Shachal, we talk about also trimming your beard. Number one, haircuts. Okay? Maybe you want to say that includes trimming a beard. Maybe yes, maybe no. But it's not pashut. But okay. But haircuts. The only other thing, okay, the only other thing is...
Didn't you discuss making a wedding on Erev Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah? Okay, just ignore me.
Only one other thing. As far as I know, one other thing.
What?
But let's be careful and be precise. The other thing is getting married. Okay, now listen very carefully. Not going to a wedding. Getting married. Okay, now if anyone is not clear that going to a wedding and getting married are not the same thing, we can talk later, but they're clearly different things, right? Everyone understand that? Okay, let me give you an illustration of what I mean by that. The question arises, and there's a reflection of this briefly in the Shulchan Aruch. It comes from earlier sources, from Rishonim, talk about this. What happens if someone during Sfira decides to get married anyhow? Okay, I have a second cousin, not particularly from, and he decides he's getting married during Sfira. He doesn't care about Sfira, maybe he's never heard, whatever, even if he's heard, everyone's heard of Sfira. Not everyone's heard of Yom Kippur, everyone's heard of Sfira. So anyhow, Beseder, he's going to get married anyhow. The question is asked, listen carefully, am I allowed to go to his wedding during Sfira? Now, the answer is yes, I am allowed to go. Okay, that's the answer. But the answer doesn't even interest me. The question, if we define it precisely, is very interesting. Now, if I were to ask, if you were invited, now put yourself in this situation. You receive an invitation, it's during Sfira, you're invited to a wedding, okay? Your second cousin, your friend from high school, whatever it is, someone's getting married during Sfira, you have this invitation, and you want to know, can I go to the wedding? So you go to whoever your posek is, and you want to know, and you ask him, can I go to the wedding? Why are you asking?
Because
it's Sfira. So what if it's Sfira? So therefore, what's the question? What's the problem with my going to my friend, cousin, whatever's wedding? What's the problem?
Because if I'm in mourning, I can't go to a simcha. Because
there's live music.
Okay. No one says, even in the question, forget about the answer, is that you can go anyhow. The question is not, can I go, but it's a simcha. The question is not, can I go, but there's going to be singing and dancing, and it's a party, and whatever else, there's going to be a smorgasbord. That's not the question. That question is not asked. Not asked. The question that's asked is a different question. If I go to his wedding, then I'm condoning his violating this minhag. Okay? Now the answer is, so the question that's asked is, do we punish the person? Do we, is there a knas that, well, you did the wrong thing, you got married, tough, I'm not going to your wedding. The answer is no, I go anyhow. Okay? But aside from the answer, which is interesting, what's fascinating is that no one asks, How can I go? But it's a party, it's singing, this, whatever. That's not even a question. Why is it not a question? Because the halacha of, as formulated by the Gaonim, and the Rishonim, and the Shulchan Aruch, is, and let's read inside for a moment, Shulchan Aruch, Archaim Simin Tav Tzai Gimel, Noagim Shelo Lisa Isha Ben Pesach Latzeret Lag Ba'omer, Mipnei Shabotos Man Meitu Tami Rabbi Akiva, Avol Ares L'Kadesh Shapir Dami, V'Nesuin Nami Misha Kafatz B'Kines Ein On Shimoto, meaning we don't punish him by not going to the wedding. Okay? As Ramah Miu Milag Ba'omer V'Elach HaKol Shari, next halacha, no gim shalos da per adlag ba'omer, adlag la'omer, shomrim, she'az, pasku, melamut, and so on and so forth, and goes into details of exactly how you count this period from Rosh Chodesh, from the beginning, whatever it is. Shalo lisa isha. Now, what happens? Okay, what happens? We go from a halacha, from the Gaonim, from the Rishonim, from the Shulchan Aruch, it says very clearly that there are two things, period, that are asur. One is haircuts. Okay, so we have a little bit of a question. Does that include shaving or not? Does it include trimming your beard or not? Okay, beseder. But pachod yoter is very clear, very, very clear, very straightforward. Okay, no haircuts. Number two, you can't get mad. Now, interesting question. Where does an issue of my listening to my iPod on the bus come from? Where's that? Forget about the answer. Where's the question come from? Okay? And the answer is, that's an extension of an extension of extension, not of an extension, but of a jump. Okay, let me explain what I mean. The Magen Avraham, which Rubah DeRubah, the Times of tremendous sefer. The Magen Avraham has an incredible chiddush, okay, which comes up, relatively recently. Magen Avraham is not that long ago, sach hakol, in the span of Jewish history, even in the span of this minute. Magen Avraham comes along and says that you can't have rikudim and mecholot. Rikudim and mecholot, which means singing and dancing. Okay, singing and dancing. Can't have dancing to music during sphere. He, by the way, does not talk about singing or listening to music. Obviously, there were no CDs or iPods, etc. But he doesn't talk about listening to a band, which they did have. He doesn't talk about anything. He talks about singing and dance, okay? Which is a huge jump, because what has the Magen Avraham done? He's gone from what is clearly the original halacha, namely, what? That you can't get married. He's turned that into you can't go to a wedding, okay, which is, well, the first step is from you can't get married to you can't go to a wedding, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a leap. It's not an extension, it's a leap. I don't understand conceptually how there's any connection between the two. Who's that? Obviously, if no one's getting married, so then you know, there are no ways to go. But the question of what happens if someone does get married is asked. And no one says it's a problem to go to the wedding, mitzad itself, mitzad avelut. It's only a question of whether, you know, we punish him for doing the wrong thing. But certainly, I there's not an issue of my going to a wedding. There's not an issue of my going. So then he goes from that to, well, if you can't go to a wedding, you can't go to other parties or singing or whatever. You can't have singing and dancing. And then you come to really recently, just the last few decades, and suddenly there are issues of it, like, phew, unbelievable. Things that there's no remnants of even in the Magen. And you go, and there's all of a sudden there are all these issues of things like, well, can you listen to a CD while driving the car? Can I go to a movie? Can I wear new clothing? Can I say Shechiyah? Things that have like mashed, and what happens is like all the halachot of the 3 weeks and 9 days and get dragged in to Sfira. Now, I'm not done. Okay. I told you, you have to have patience. I think it's worth it, but you have to have patience. Let's go a step further. Okay, so you say new, so we're machmir. What do you want? So we're machmir. Tov lachmir. What do you want? Tov lachmir. Okay. Now, I can think of better things to be machmir, but okay, but so this person wants to be machmir, so be. So here, I want to say that I really feel it's important to distinguish between taking something and moving forward with it, and it was taking something that's in the spirit of the halacha, and doing lifnim mishrat hadin, okay, which is really not what a typical chumrah is in any case. A typical chumrah is really being choshesh for a shita, yeah, whatever. But okay, but naniach, we'll say that I'm taking some, but certainly there's room, lifnim mishrat hadin is important. Yeah, say a person feels they want to, so I'll give you an example. A person during the 3 weeks wants to be machmir, even though it's not even a din, 3 weeks is not even a din drabban, but beseder, but it is a period of avelut. It makes sense. You want to express the avera of the korban. You want to express it on a personal level for yourself in a little bit more intense way. Okay, beseder, kol kavod, no problems. I don't have a problem with that. And in fact, a lot of times during some people ask Shaila about, you know, about the 3 weeks or 9 days, whatever, you know, this is where I think the is meikar din. You want to be machmir beyond that, kol kavod. But Sphira is not like that. Sphira is not like that. The Ramban in Vayikra Parakhav Gimel says as follows. Vahayamim, third source on the second side. Vahayamim hasurim beintayim. This is a tremendously important Ramban on many levels. But he says like this. Hayamim hasurim beintayim kecholo shalmoe bein arishon vashmini b'chag. The period of Sphira between Pesach and Shavuot, the nature of that period, it's like a kind of chol hamoed. I don't mean there's an Isra malacha, but it's like in terms of the spirit of the day, it's like a chol hamoed, just like between the beginning of Sukkah and Shemini Atzeret, parallel to that. And the Ramban is alluding to the idea, which I've spoken about on other occasions, about the parallelism between the Nisan cycle and the Tishrei cycle. Some people may remember, right, how we have the first of Nisan, the first of Tishrei, another parallel, and the 10th and the 15th. And ideally, we find many sources, including in the Zohar, including in alluded to in the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, etc. But the Ramban says it's like Chol Hamoed. Now, we know, and that's what it goes on to say, and that's why Chazal always referred to Shavuot as Atzeret, because it's parallel to Shemini Atzeret, v'chul. Okay, very nice. Very important, Yisrael. Chol Hamoed is a time of simcha. It's not a time of avelut. The period between Pesach and Shavuot is a period of happiness and excitement, of going from Pesach, which represents Hashem's great love for Am Yisrael, B'ni B'chor Yisrael, to Shavuot, which represents Hashem's giving us the greatest treasure, namely the Torah and the mitzvot. And it's a period of preparation and anticipation. And it's not Chas V'Shalom, a period of Avel, it's a period of Simcha. And that's why, Laniyat Aiti, I know I'm bucking the world here, not quite, but close to it, Beseder, but, to call it like you see it, it seems to me that the more we're machmir about the Avel of Sphira, not the better it is, the worse it is. You say, but what do you mean? But I have the Gaonim and the Rishon and the Shulchan, they all say that there's Avel during Sphira. We have Lolisa Isha. We'll get to it in a moment. Okay. But my point is, to begin with, there's a difference between moving further than necessary Mikar Din in the same direction, and between turning around at 180 degrees and going the opposite direction. It's not the same thing. Which is what bothers me so much about all these, you know, so what? So I won't say Shechiyah, so I won't buy my new clothing, I'll buy in a few weeks, who cares? Or I'll, you know, not listen to music, or I won't do this, I won't do whatever it is. In fact, in case you think this is just like a Hashkava point, and post and quote is that, Chuvat Yechavadat, Chelek Gimel, Simen Lamed, he was asked about a certain issue during Sphira. The particulars are not really the point. He goes on to say that there's a fundamental difference between the 3 weeks. First he starts off and saying, well, we may compare it to 3 weeks. And he says, Ulam lachar hitbonenut nir'a sheyesh chiluk gadol ben yimei chodesh av hanizkar la'el לבין ימי הספירה. כי בחודש אב שיראו בו חורבן בית המקדש ושאר פרניות המבוארים במשנתנית, הוא זמן של אסון כללי לעם ישראל, ונקבע בחייה לדורות, שמגל למחוב על יום חייו. אבל ימי הספירה מצד עצמם אינם נחשבים לימי פרניות חס ושלום. עד רבה, כתב הרמב"ן, שקדושה ימי הספירה כימי חול המועד. And so on and so forth. I was very excited when I found this tshuva. In any case, here he's saying, Chas v'shalom, sphere is not a period of Avelut. There are certain nihuge Avelut, but it's not a period of Avelut. It's not a period of Avelut. That's what Ramban tells us here. But I want to go a step further. I want you to understand, and if you get, this is perhaps, in terms of the halachic part, the most important line. Listen very carefully. The way that the Gaonim and Rishonim, and all the way through the Shulchan Aruch, formulated everyone until the Magen Avraham, the way this minhag in its original form was formulated is absolutely brilliant. Listen carefully. Because I'm reconstructing, right? I'm what's that called? You take a computer program and you figure out the code from the prime, what's it called? English words. Been almost 3 years, Baruch Hashem, since I'm losing my English. But anyhow, anyhow, whatever. Okay, the point is, no. All right, whatever. May I come back. In any case. But I'm reconstructing the thought process of when this minhag, which really is shrouded in somewhat in clouds of time, what were the, when the Gaonim formulated this minhag, it was with incredible chachma. Why? Listen carefully to the idea. When the Gaonim formulated this idea, they said to themselves, we have a fascinating dichotomy during the Yemei HaSfira. Mitzad Echad, it's Yemei Simcha, it's like Chol HaMoed. It's a time of joy and excitement and getting ready for Matan Torah, for Kabbalah Torah. It's a time of joy and Simcha. On the other hand, we have this very important lesson of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. It's not even a question we're sad about Talmidei. It's an important lesson. We have to understand what Talmud Torah is. We have to understand what it means to learn, what we're supposed to be doing when we learn. There are so many people who unfortunately learn but don't understand what it means to learn. Sometimes even Chas v'Shalom, the category of Noach Lo Shlo Nivra, as Tosa explains the Gemara. But certainly people who learn and don't understand what it is to learn. And we'll get back to that Ezra Hashem in a few moments. We've got to remember Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. But it's a period of Simcha. It's Chol HaMoed. And you can't have Avelut on Chol HaMoed. You can't have Avelut on Chol HaMoed. There's no Avelut on Chol HaMoed. So how do you reconcile the two? Right, we have two goals in Halacha. Two things we're trying to accomplish. And how do we synthesize the two? So look at the brilliant answer that the Gaonim come up with. What do they say? You go through all of the Nihugei Avelut. Can come up with two nihugei avelut, two things that you can't do, that person can't do when they're in avel, that you also can't do during Chol HaMoed. For totally different reasons, not because of avel, for different reasons. You can't get married during Chol HaMoed, because ein ma'arvim simcha b'simcha, it's aser to get married during Chol HaMoed. And it's aser to cut your hair during Chol HaMoed, because it's iser d'rabban, shem yikaras l'regel menuva. If we're noheg during Svira because of the avelut for Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, if we're noheg not to marry and not to cut our hair for these weeks, then what? I have achieved a commemoration of a kind of avelut for Talmidei Rabbi Akiva without ki huzeh compromising on the quality of these days as Chol HaMoed. Everyone understand what I'm saying? There is no stira between being prohibited to get married and cut your hair and it being Chol HaMoed. Because on Chol HaMoed you also can't cut your hair and get married. for totally different reasons. But what I'm saying is that if during this period of time I'm not cutting my hair and I'm not getting married, that doesn't take away from it being like Chol Hamoed, because in Chol Hamoed I also can't do those things. Understand what I'm saying? There's a critical point. If you don't have it, please, I'm glad to repeat it. Very important to understand this. If you take the minhag as it's formulated in the Gaonim, Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch, you are being Noeg Avel v'Tamir Rabbi Akiva, but it's not changing the days from being Chol Hamoed like even an iota.
For
these things being asked, absolutely.
No, for that.
For what?
That their thought process. That they
no,
chose.
I said I'm reconstructing. I'm not saying that they spell out why it is. I'm giving you a suggestion why it is that Davka these two things are said. And nothing else.
For the Gaonim, where is that on the source sheet?
I tried to stuff everything on the source sheet and not everything. The Gaonim. Up here we have quotes in several of the Meiri quotes and the Tur quotes, and we have several quotes in different Rishonim, and you can look in the Tur instead of the Shulchan Aruch here, and you'll see the Gaonim. And so, yeah.
But when someone dies in your family during Yom Tov, you put off the Shiva till after Yom Tov.
Exactly. There's no avail during Chol Hamoed.
Right. So. Why
don't
we push off?
You'll see. You'll see. Bear with me a few more minutes. You'll see. Okay? There's a very, very important reason. Yes?
Someone died during
Yeah, there is avail during. I'm not saying there isn't, but there's a difference between something that happens in Mikra and so in that instance, for that person, they're going to lose out on something of Sphira, Beseder. But to change for Am Yisrael the quality of these days into something totally different, it's a very different thing. Yes, please. I'm not saying everyone accepts the Magen Avraham. Okay? I understand that. Lot. But let me respond the following way. I'm not trying to tell anyone what to do about this. Okay? I want to bring an issue to your attention. Okay? And I'm going to suggest a direction. I'm not going to draw a clear line. I'm going to suggest a direction. But what I'm saying is as follows. That I think this Magen Avraham is tremendously problematic. That's my point. I think this Magen Avraham is tremendously problematic. That's what I'm saying. Okay. Yes?
So once you take the issue from not getting married,
right. That's why I think it's called Mosif Goreya. That's why I'm saying that if you want to say, and again, I'm not trying to suggest one bottom line, but if Naniach, you say, no, what can I do? Everyone accepts the Magen Avraham, that's already become Magen Yisrael, what can I do about it? Maybe that's even correct. Maybe. But the Magen Avraham says no rikudim u'mecholot. But to say I'm going to add to the Magen Avraham, means that you can't have singing and dancing together, singing and dancing. Like, you know, where you music, and you, yeah, dance. That's what the Magen Avraham says, okay? What I'm saying is that I think that the Magen Avraham is innately problematic, okay? To build and build and build and build on the Magen Avraham is Lani Adaiti going in the wrong direction, okay? To say, okay, I accept the, you know, b'dieved, I accept the Magen Avraham, but I can't blow your tear. No, I can hear that. I'm not saying whether I agree or disagree with it, but I can hear it. But to say that you know, we should be machmir, again, extension, I have tremendous problems with that. And I know that every other teacher's got to tell you otherwise, but, and whoever, you know, whoever, and I'm not saying you shouldn't listen to them, you should listen to me. Why should you listen to me? Why listen to the Magen Avraham? Listen to Ramosh, whatever. All I'm saying is that I'm trying to show you based on the sources, based on Sfara, what I think is extremely compelling. So you'll be aware of it. I think that this, if nothing else, gives you an appreciation of what the original Minhag was about. And what do you do about everything that's happened since then? Okay, that's an interesting question. But, yes?
So, if there are people who, like, take on these, like, cameras or whatever,
yes,
or they are, I'm not saying that everybody does that, but if there are people who do them and they look down on people who don't, wouldn't that just be, like doing the opposite of what we're supposed to learn from the lesson of the Gemara?
I think that's absolutely true. I feel that you want to be machmir about the issue of Shlo Nagu Kolosoza. Be machmir about the Magen Avraham's extension, which is against everything that we have in the Gaonim, Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch. Okay. Can you go a step further?
Oh, dear.
This is the Pshad in the Primogatim. Say, wait a minute, no one agrees with me. Well, not so fast. Look what the Prima Gadim says. Anyone who can take a haircut during Chol HaMoed can take a haircut during Sfira. What does one thing have to do with the other? Why, how can you make that jump? No, the Prima Gadim is 100% right. Because the whole point is that Sfira, what we're doing is, we're imitating, not in terms of the reason, not in terms of the why, but in terms of the what. We're imitating Chol HaMoed. So if a person is Yotzei Mibeit HaAsurim can take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, they can take a haircut during Sfira. And to not say that would be to impinge on the Chol HaMoed nature of it. And the Prima Gadim is a tremendous riot, what we're saying. Yes. The Prima Gadim says something at first glance looks like that because the wines are so different and they should yield different results. He says anyone who can take a haircut during Chol HaMoed can certainly take a haircut during Sfira. Why? Well, what do we mean? But one's Shemayin kind of is the regal maneuver and one's because of our veil. What does one thing have to do with the other? Even if one's more Chama, but so what? The answer is that no, the paradigm for Sfira is Chol HaMoed. That's the whole point. If you understand the minhag, you understand why, of course, anyone can take a haircut during Chol HaMoed can take a haircut during Sfira. Okay?
I don't understand what that means.
What does what mean?
What mean?
Okay. The model for Sfira in terms of Avelut is Chol HaMoed. Right? It was patterned after Chol HaMoed. Just like on Chol HaMoed, we don't do other nihu gei avelut, but we don't get married and don't take a haircut. So the idea is that at least on the surface, it should look like Chol HaMoed. We shouldn't take away from the form of Chol HaMoed. So the way to do that is to transfer the halachot of Chol HaMoed in terms of haircuts.
And not anymore,
of course not. So what?
I don't know.
We know it's the Ramban is not saying that, and Rabbi Yossi, they're not saying that it is Pesach. They're not saying that it's Chol HaMoed in the sense of Isur Melacha, or in terms of the sense of other halachot that may pertain. Saying it's like in terms of the issue of Simcha, in terms of the issue of what it's about, what the spirit of the day is. Yeah.
So can you get married? Don't.
No, that's the point. You can't get married during Chol HaMoed.
Yeah, but he's just said here that you can have a haircut on Chol HaMoed.
He says those exceptions that apply to Chol HaMoed apply also to Sfira. So I'm saying why? The reason this explains why. Okay? Yeah?
So is this where we get that men who go to work that can achieve during Sfira is from the Prima Gadim? Where's that come from?
Okay, there are three different reasons, at least, why you can shave during Sfira. And people say, if you're going to work, you can. I don't think that they're saying it based on this. They say it based on a different issue, which I don't want to get involved in. I'll be glad to discuss. But it's okay. And Bichlal, the whole thing. Look, I'll tell you, from I don't know, 20 years ago or more. I heard the following story, and I think it's true. But, okay. I'm not sure. I don't know first sense. Okay, maybe separately. I want to move forward to something more important. Okay. We need to add one more piece. Okay, one more piece. To fully understand the issue. It's very important. Again, before we leave the halachic part and return to the more the concept behind it, I want to just emphasize there are real questions, legitimate questions of what, you know, let's say you agree with everything I just told you. Let's say, I'm not saying you do, but let's say someone does. Then what do you do about it, right? So, okay, what about, you know, what's nahum and this, that, and the other? And those are legitimate questions. I'm not getting involved in that. That's a different issue. What you should do in terms of, well, but this is my family, this is what my family does, or this is what my posik says. I'm not getting involved in those issues. That's a different tier. It's a different level, different dimension of the whole problem. I'm simply discussing, I want you to understand, my interest is to understand what the kivun is meant to be, what the concept of this avail during sphere is about, to understand why it's important, what the message of Talmid Rabbi Akiva is, to understand the beauty of the pristine minhag, the original minhag as formulated in the Gaonim, Mishonim, even the Shulchan Aruch, to understand the beauty of how it's presented, how it's formulated, and then what happens with recent Magen Avraham and on recent, again, is very from my perspective, corruptions of the original minhag. That's already a different question, how we deal with that, Bechule, and that's a topic in and of itself, which we're not going to deal with right now, but that's between you and your parents and your posek and your this and that, and I'm not getting involved in that. Okay? I'm suggesting a direction. This is Gemara in Brachot. And Afkaf Amidbet. Third part of Brachot. The Gemara says that there was a Takana Esra, and it's a complicated sugya, exactly what kind of halacha and what. I'm going to give you an oversimplified, I'm aware it's oversimplified, and by oversimplified I mean inaccurate description of it, but we can't learn half of the third parak of Brachot, al regel achana. I just want to focus on one point, but I have to give you a slight bit of recha, so I'm going to do it in an imprecise way, okay? So don't take me exactly the word. There's a takana that, the kind of Ezra, that it's asur for a man who had relations with his wife to learn Torah or to say Brachot, daven. Again, I'm oversimplifying. Until he goes to the mikvah. Now again, I'm summarizing many dapim of the third parak of Brachot into a sentence, and obviously by doing that I'm saying some things that are a little bit inaccurate, even incorrect. But that's the basic idea. It's called Tumat Bal Keri. Okay, Tumat Bal Keri is all right, but the idea that you can't, but that's in terms of going to the mikdash, whatever, in terms of learning Torah and Brachot, that type of thing, so that's this takana that we're discussing here. Okay, that's the Bal Keri that we're discussing here. Says the Mishnah, Bal Keri Mahar Belibo Ve'eno Mevarech Lo Fanev Lo Acharei. Okay, so he's Mahar Belibo, comes to Kriyat Shema, he says it mentally, but he doesn't articulate the words. Va'amazim Mevarech Lachrav and Mevarech Lafanav, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mevarech Lafanav, etc., etc., says the Gemara. Okay, Gemara, middle of the second line. Amar Ravina, Zot Omerit, the fact that he says Kriyat Shema only by thought and not speaking, what we call hirhur, right, just thinking. So we see that hirhur kedibur dami, that thinking is like saying it. Simple reading of the Gemara, again, this is a long discussion, machlok rishonim, discussion achrom, simple reading of it. What? We'll get to Shemekon in a second, but I'm going to hold off for 1 second. Says the Gemara, says Ravina, there are two opinions in the Gemara. Ravina says, well, this tells you that here, Kedibur Dami, simple reading Gemara, is that means that even a person is not a Bal Keri, if he were to say Kriyat Shema thinking, instead of saying it, he would be Yotze. It's not Al-Khatzila, but he would be Yotze. That here, who is Kedibur, it's like saying it. De'i Sal Kedaitach Lav Kedibur Dami, Lama Maharher. So what would you accomplish by thinking it if it's not Kedibur? You're not Yotze anyhow. Ask the Gemara. Again, Ravina is only one piece, and I'm only giving you a superficial reading, so don't take any conclusions from this, but again, I'm focusing on one point. Ella Mai, says the Gemara, but one second. Here, Kedibur Dam, if you'll tell me that it is as if you said it, so Yotzi Bisfatav, so why don't you say it? It's the same thing, so why do you need to think it instead of saying it? Right? If it anyhow is like saying it, so why don't you just say it? Like everyone else does. Ah, no, says the Gemara. Keda Ashkechan Bisinai. The model, the paradigm for this Isur about Keri learning Torah, saying Bracha V'chule, is Mamad Har Sinai. Okay? Mamad Har Sinai, that separate from their wives before, V'chule, right? So this is where we learn from. Okay, Beseder. Meaning. So what? Well, okay. That's a good question. So, what does it mean, Kedash Chama Sinai? So we don't understand it, so we have to go to Rashi. And Rashi says, Kedash Kachan Besinai, Shefrishan Me'isha Dechtiv Al Tikshu El Isha, Val Prisha Zo Samach Ezra Letakein Tvilo Balikarian, Kodim Chiasku Betorah, Dechtiv, Vodatam Levanecha Vesamach Le, Yom HaShamata Lefnei Hashem Al Kach B'Chorei. There's a juxtaposition of Vodatim Levanecha, teaching Torah, and Yom HaShamata Lefnei Hashem Al Kach B'Chorei, Mamad Har Sinai, Kamila Kaman Perikin, as the Gemara says later on in Chaf Aleph. Therefore what? Therefore, just like at Har Sinai, so, therefore what? So Tosa comes along and explains, Kida'ash Kam Sinai, the previous source, Kida'ash Kam Sinai, says Tosa, Perush, Afal Gav, de Kedibur Dami, Le'inyan Sheyatza, Mikol Makom Lav, Kedibur Dami, Le'inyan Sheyat, Bal Kari Asu Lahar Her. Why? Kidash Kham Basinai, as we find at Mamad Har Sinai. Dahaya Sham Dibor Bayut Srichim Litbal. Because at Har Sinai there was Dibor, and that's why they had to go to the mikvah first. Now, one second. There's an obvious question. What's the obvious question? It's unbelievable. It's an incredible Tosa. That's like, it's almost funny. Maybe it is even funny. Tosa then says, right, so Tosa says, what's the Pshan Gemara Kedash Kama Sinai? Because at Sinai, which is the model for this Takana, there was Dibur. And since there was Dibur, and for the Dibur they were required to do Tefillah, so you see that's the basis for this, and therefore if there's no Dibur, you don't need to be Tova. Ask Tosa.
Does that prove anything?
There's
no simple
theory. Ask the Tosa. Afal pi shayu shotgen. It's mind-boggling, right? Why is it only asur for Baal Keri to articulate the words? Because it's modeled after Sinai. And at Sinai, there was Dibor. I'll ask, but they were silent. They were just listening. It's quite a question, right? Some old question. That's like the old joke about the rebbe who's giving this whole Dvar Torah about why there's a vav in this word. But there is no vav. That's another answer, right? So it's like incredible. Like Tosa says, it's mind-boggling, right? Tosa says, well, it's all based on Sinai. At Sinai, it was Dibor. Of course, you may ask that there wasn't Dibor. So what's the answer? Says Tosa, well, now we're ready. Shomea ke'ona. But Shomea, right, is ke'ona. That's Tosa's answer. Now, I'm going to understand. So they merely listened to what Hashem said, but listening is like saying. So you see there was Dibor. That's the reason. Now, I don't want to get too heavily involved in the sugi, but I want to point out the following. This is an incredible thing. Rashi, what does Rashi say? Kedash Kam B'Sinai. You notice the thing about here, Kedibor here in Rashi? No. Why not? Because Rashi could not have given this answer. Rashi could not have given this answer. The famous machlok, I think we mentioned once before at the beginning of the year, but very quickly, famous machlok between Rashi and Tosa, okay? Rashi says, I'm standing in the middle of my Shmona Esrei, and the Tzibur gets up, let's say, to Kedusha, right? And they're saying, Kadosh, Kadosh, what do I do? Says Rashi, what do? I pause my Shmona Esrei, and I'm Yotze because Shomea Ka'one. Right, everyone remember that? Yes? Says Tosfot, what do you mean if Shomea Ka'one, it's a Hefsek? Just like you can't say it, you can't listen, so you have to keep on going. Right? Now, we pass like Rashi. But that's what Tosfot says. What's the machlok between Rashi and Tosfot? It's obvious. The Tosot says that Shomea Ka'ona means, it says if I'm actually saying it, right? And therefore it's a hefsek. Rashi says, no, what are you talking about? Shomea Ka'ona means that I'm not doing anything. I'm silent. I'm listening. But the chalos, the I'm yotzei with what the other person did. I connect to what they did in the sense that what their kiyum relates back to me as well. But it's not as if I did it. And that's why Rashi says it's not a hefsek. Okay? Shomea Ka'ona. Fine. Could Rashi give Tosot's answer about Kiddush Hashem b'Sinai?
No,
because they were silent and listened. That's not as if they were speaking. So how can you model after there? So what's the answer according to Rashi? So if you read Rashi very carefully, and we're not going to spend a long time. If you read Rashi very carefully, he's saying the following. It's a beautiful pshat. Tamir Rabbeinu Yonah articulate this idea. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea. And this is going to be the key to putting it all together. It says Rabbeinu Yonah, I'm saying in my own words, and he doesn't say exactly this, but this is the kivon. Rabbeinu Yonah says like this, look, you know, we received mitzvot, we were taught mitzvot, and other times also, not just at Har Sinai, right? It's also Mara, right? It's not the first time we've seen mitzvot. So why dafka here, do we have to be tovel? What's special about Mamad Har Sinai? So if you tell me, well, but there was a Gilui Shechina, there was a divine revelation, all that, so then if you're going to tell me that that was unique and it's different than just learning Torah, so then I can't learn from here to anything else, right? So what was it about Har Sinai? And Rabbeinu Yonah basically says the following, we received at Sinai, and then you could spend a long time on this one point, discussing other times, what we received at Sinai was not the ability to learn Torah. The ability to receive Torah that we got on other occasions. What we received at Sinai is the idea of Lo Bashamayim, the ability to transmit Torah, to teach Torah. Okay, that's what we received at Sinai, was the ability to transmit Torah to others. And that is done only Al Yidei Dibur. Okay, and that affects all kinds of things, issues of Birchat HaTorah, we're not going to get involved in everything, but B'Kitzur Nimratz, what we received at Sinai was the ability to be Medaber in Torah, and that's why it's Dafka by Dibur that we have this Takana of Ezra. What am I getting at? There's a Gemara in Kedushin, and there's a parallel Yerushalmi, it's even clearer in the Yerushalmi. I'm Rabbi Shubin Levin, we've shown him. Call him Melamed at Ben Beno Torah Malav, Akazim Kilu Kibla Mehar Sinai. Right? If I teach this version, my son, my grandson, Torah, it's as if Kilu Kibla Mehar Sinai, it's as if he received it from Har Sinai. As if who received it from Har Sinai? The teacher or the student? So some say the student. But if you look at the Yerushalmi, it really is clear, and some Yerushalmi still hints at this, perhaps, it means, it's when I teach Torah that I actualize the potential that I received at Har Sinai. And therefore, call Melame Ben Beno Torah, Kilu Kilu Mehar Sinai. That's what I received at Har Sinai. Shenamar Vodatmu Vanech Vnei Vanech V'samach Lei Yom Asher Amarat Vnei Asher Lekach B'Chorev. This is the Gemara that Rashi quotes in explaining Kiddush Hashem B'Sinai. Meaning. I want to conclude with a Yireim. Okay, Yireim Rabbi Lezmi Mitz, one of the great Talmidim, direct Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam, very important Rishon in his own right, Sefer Yireim, and I'm sure that everyone here in the course of learning Hilchot Shabbat have come across at least once, if not many, many times, the Sefer Yireim, who lets mitz. Bisha will be totally different without realizing the mitz. In any case, the point is like this. The Yireim says as follows. Time back, Shinatam Vanecha, says the Yireim, Kfar Pirashi b'mitzvah l'mod, mitzvah l'ameid, b'incha Torah, etc. Mushinantim lamadnu gam shemitzal adam lilamed atzmo. There's not only a chiyuv, says the Yireim, listen carefully to what he says, there's not only a mitzvah to teach others, there's even a mitzvah to learn Torah myself. Hear what he says? There's not only a mitzvah to teach others, there's even a mitzvah to learn Torah myself. Let's continue. Now, if I were to ask you to come up with a Gemara, a Chazal someplace, that says that there's a chiyuv to learn Torah, could you come up with a source? Is it hard? Like, no source is about Talmud Torah, right? Mm-hmm. Like, look at the source he chooses out of who knows how many. After all, I'll prove it to you. There's a Gemara in Kedushin. Kedetanya, but Kedushin Parak Aleph. Mishinantam shiu divrei Torah mechudadim beficha. That person should, the words of Torah should be fluent in one's mouth. She'im yish'alcha adam, if someone asks you, lo tegamgem v'tomar, you shouldn't have to mumble, you shouldn't have to fumble. Ella and more lo miyai, you should be able to answer right away. She'ne'emar and more lo chachma achotiyat. Of all the sources that the Urim could have quoted, he quotes only one. And that is, why do I have to learn Torah? Why do I have to learn Torah? For one reason. So I should have the answer when someone asks me. In other words, the purpose of learning Torah is so I should be able to teach others. That is the essence of Talmud Torah. If I don't understand that, I don't understand the first thing about Talmud Torah. The essence of Talmud Torah is so I should be able to teach others. That's what it's about. Okay, that's the Yisod in Talmud Torah. That I learn, not so that I should become a Talmud, I learn so that I should be able to teach others. So if someone has a question, if someone doesn't understand, I can explain it to them. That's why I learned Torah. What Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim in the first set miss on some level, to some degree, and I'm not here to decide, judge where, what degree and how, you know, whether it's in, blown up to make a point or not, or, well, I don't know. Shelo nagu kavod zelazeh. Shayu einehem tzara b'torah. It was a stinginess. It was a self-centeredness in Torah. And that's the antithesis of Torah Lishma. As Rabbi Meir, the other Rabbi Tanisho Darom, learned from Rabbi Akiva and transmitted generation to generation to us. The importance of understanding that the essence of Talmud Torah is learning in order to be able to teach others. Whoever those others may be. Our family members, our neighbors, our friends, other people, whatever it is. But that's the essence, that's why we learn. And therefore, we're told that what we received at Mamad Har Sinai is the ability to transmit Torah. That's what we received at Mamad Har Sinai. Can we just wait for a moment? I just want to wrap up, and then Simcha, I'll take whatever question you have. What we received at Mamad Har Sinai is the ability to teach and to transmit Torah. That's what we received at Har Sinai. And therefore, we have a holiday that commemorates what we received at Har Sinai. What's that called?
Shavuos.
Very good. I know.
That was awkward delay.
Torah, right? We're coming to, we are preparing for, we're getting ready for, we're in the period of Sphira. What are we counting? We're counting up to Kabbalat HaTorah. What did we receive in Kabbalat HaTorah? The ability of Avodatem Levanecha Levnei Vanecha, the ability to transmit, to teach Torah. The lesson of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva is the thing, the lesson that we should be most focused on during the period of Sphira. There's nothing more appropriate for preparing for Kabbalat HaTorah. There's nothing that's more appropriate for our preparing for Shavuot than to commemorate the tragic lesson of the first set of Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva and the heroic message of the second set of Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Nothing could be a more appropriate preparation. And therefore, even though this is a time of simcha, and it's a time of joy and excitement and getting ready for Kabbalat HaTorah, even though it's important that we take out a tiny bit, in a way that doesn't interfere with it being like Chol HaMoed, in a way that doesn't interfere with it being a period of preparation for Kabbalat HaTorah, by not getting married and by not taking haircuts, which anyhow you don't do on Chol HaMoed. But by doing so, we have a little bit of a reminder. You think about the message of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, because that is part and parcel. It's the essence, in fact. It's the essence of getting ready for Kabbalat HaTorah. And therefore, it's not two contradictory things, but if we understand each properly, and if we understand how to put it together properly, they're two sides of one coin. And if you take the way our Chachamim over generations and generations, over centuries and centuries, and more than that, from the Gaonim through the Rishonim through the Shulchan Aruch formulated this, we see the beautiful synthesis of these different concepts, of these different practices, and how it all comes together in such beautiful harmony. It's a beautiful symphony of Torah. We have to understand it all harmonizes beautifully if we understand it properly. Maniataiti, this is the proper understanding. Understand it this way, then everything comes together so beautifully. And we understand what the Prima Gautam is saying, we understand the Shulchan Aruch is saying, we understand what everyone is saying, we understand exactly, we understand why Davka these things. I tell you, people why these two nihugim? And they start from that extrapolating. Well, it must be like Yud Beis Chodesh and Chulei V'Chol, right? It's a great Gedolim say that. The Rav who said, you know, the level of Avelut, and because there has to be a level of Avelut. And I'm aware of that. I understand why I wanted to say that, etc. And therefore, there's all kinds of extrapolations from Yud Beis Chodesh to Svira. There's not a mention of that in the Gaonim, in the Rishonim, the Shulchan Aruch. It's an assumption based on the fact, well, if marriage and haircuts are asur, so those are symptoms of the Yud Beis Chodesh. I would say differently. I would say that, no, it's not a reflection of Yud Beis Chodesh. It's a reflection because there are no clue, no hint of that kiuzeh in any of the primary sources. It's rather than lehepach. There are things that disprove it, and the shiloh about going to someone's wedding being a prime example. What we have here is rather a way of having a commemoration of Eilut for Tamir Rabbi Akiva because of the important lesson of it, while not taking away kiuzeh from the real nature of these days, which is that's a type of Chol HaMoed like experience. It's a type of a bridge between Pesach and Shavuot and a preparation for Kabbalat HaTorah. That's what I think is really going on here. Okay, so food for thought. And stop this point four.